This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mother, don't you recognize your son?
Welcome, everybody, once again to a Sopranos podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is
David Funernick. Do you say my name in Joe Spellman?
My name in Joe Spellman, David Funernick.
Three seasons in, you're still perfecting the intro. That's reasonable. And I'm Paul Golias.
And we're talking Sopranos Pod.
Oh, shit. Meta.
This episode. Season 3, Episode 4, Employee of the Month.
It's a humdinger, guys.
Yeah, this is a tough ep. tough ep.
Johnny the Nuts, not touching this one.
No way.
He refused.
No,
he insisted and we refused.
Yeah.
Even Johnny the Nut knows like, better. You know, he's an avid watcher of Law & Order SVU, so he's... well aware of these types of situations and storylines.
Well educated.
You know, and he doesn't support it.
He doesn't support the storylines?
He doesn't support.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, I thought you meant.
Because some of the scenes.
I thought you meant messing with the Russians.
No, he definitely writes some sick shit, yeah. But he can never condone something like this.
Good on him.
Good on him.
The bare minimum.
This is a softball for Johnny the Nut.
Yep.
You condone rape. No, but so this episode, yes, of course, season 3, episode 4, originally aired March 18th, 2001. This is the episode, of course, everybody remembers where Dr. Melfi is unfortunately sexually assaulted and must make a decision over whether she wants to tell Tony or not. Mm-hmm. Other things that go down this episode, we have the Russians getting some probably justly deserved revenge on Janice for stealing Svetlana's leg. Mm-hmm. Or leg. As,
fuck you, you're callous.
Turturro says.
Fuck you, you're callous. I was like, oh, he's right.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
So right.
He's on Russian side on this.
Feel terrible that this guy ends up in a fucking store display. Guy was just doing his job. Come on. He's just
I still love to see the guy end up in the store display. But
At least he wasn't dead. At least he wasn't murdered.
That's true.
Right.
He could have easily been killed.
And then also this ep, we got Ralphie taking Jackie Jr. under his wing, after being passed up for cap, or no, not after, but he is also in this episode passed up for captain, by Tone. But, you guys want to get into it? Let's any thoughts up top?
Nah.
any words you want to say about, sexual violence on screen?
I find that the two hardest things to watch in the whole series are the rape scene and when Bobby gets killed. To me, those are the two most painful things. Obviously, Bobby getting killed is not nearly as intense, but I find personally, I find those two things the most upsetting in the whole series.
Yeah, I would put this up as the most upsetting thing to watch. You know, I've fast forwarded through it. It's like incredibly graphic. Yes. I mean, especially for 20 years ago, I mean, there's recent stuff with like Game of Thrones and the sort of gratuitous sexual violence on screen there that people were up in arms about. And this was 20 years ago and there were people vocally, you know, calling David Chase and the producers of Sopranos out back then for this, and not just the sexual violence of Melfi, but like, you know, all of it. But yeah, this is, This is a tough one. You know, we make a lot of jokes here, but
let me ask you though, like, since you're more familiar with like the shit that David Chase caught, I mean, Robin Green is one of the co-writers of this episode. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, like, was the criticism that like this was clearly written like from a male perspective of what rape is and what the experience of rape is?
No, I think people felt that it was like, it was too much. Like, you didn't need to go there. Like, you didn't need to show it in, because they show the entire rape start to finish.
Right.
And you're right there with them. Mm-hmm. And that's not something you get on Law and Order SVU.
True.
I feel like it was sort of, the criticism was sort of lumped in with the rest of the violence that comes with The Sopranos. Season 3 is an incredibly violent season, especially towards women. I mean, right. Even in this episode, Janice gets fucking smacked around.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, hey, yeah, that was maybe. More I'm not deserved. Saying she deserved it, but like.
Oh, she did.
Stole a woman's leg.
Right, right. Also, like, she's just like a horrible human being.
And she's terrible, yeah. And Tony warned her, like,
right.
don't do this.
Right.
But yeah, not to victim blame.
I mean,
we're going to tiptoe around all this.
No, absolutely. But like, don't you, for me, obviously as a fucking man who has never experienced being sexually abused in my life, and obviously never experienced as a woman being raped. Like, don't you think it's interesting from a storytelling perspective that we see how a therapist dealing with their own trauma mm-hmm. has to carry on being someone else's therapist while carrying their own shit?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's a super interesting storyline. The thing is, they sort of like, more or less drop it after this. We're not seeing Melfi over the arc of like a few episodes dealing with this. And I'm not even sure it's mentioned. I mean, maybe like sort of in passing or something like later, but that doesn't end up being what the story is. The story, and I think it's better for it actually to have it all be in this one episode of Melfi having to deal with the moral quandary of, am I going to sick this, you know, violent mobster on my rapist right. and exact some revenge where the law failed me.
Right? And which of course, as a viewer, like you want Tony to fucking like hurt this guy.
Well, that's the thing.
Or like, do you not? Me personally, I do, but maybe that says something about yourself. Like, you know, what is justice? Like, what is actual justice?
Did David Chase really get like they got,
you know what they got more shit for, even more than the Melfi rape, was the Tracy getting beat to death outside the Bing, which
that makes, yeah, that, well that, that makes also sense. I was gonna say, like, that's a pretty hard one too.
I mean, that's not the next episode, right?
No, that's like, university, right?
I know, yeah. So
that's like two episodes away, seven, like, maybe, yeah.
I think also, like, I mean, they do, like, you know, they do talk about things that, like, probably definitely wasn't talked about then. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, about how, like, well, the police don't give a fuck. Like, how, like, her husband is, like, victim, you know, blaming her. Right. Like, I mean, I'm not surprised that people would be like, oh, my God, I can't believe you did this, and not get the underlying messages that maybe someone, like, I don't know, Robin Green, I don't know if it was her idea or anything, right. or what they were trying to highlight in this episode that, you know, I don't think any television show was doing 20 years ago.
No, that's for sure. I mean, ultimately, I think the point that David Chase was trying to make was, I think he wanted to, like, show the audience, like, yes, okay, we all know that Tony Soprano is a bad man. We all know that members of the mafia are not good people. But By the end of that episode, you are looking to Tony to be the arbiter of justice in the cruelest way, right? Go do the worst thing possible to that person. And
Melfi sees him as that in her dream.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But right. We are sort of like, Melfi is like the conduit for, like, you know, that's that we're on her side.
Right.
We want that.
Right.
And that's, but ultimately, I think she makes the right, just, moral decision by not going there.
Right.
And you guys might disagree with me, but I think that's, and that I admire her for that.
Yeah. No, I do think that that's the takeaway, is that, like, she's a bigger person than we are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As a TV viewer,
like, who, like, is searching for maximum entertainment within the episode of a television show, you want to see it's like if it was like a fucking slave owner or something. Like, Dave Chappelle is always like, I'm gonna fucking have a slave owner get shot every day of the week because it's so, like, entertaining to him. Like, we want to see a rapist, like, get, like, hurt, like, as a TV viewer. But yeah, on a human level, like, it shows that, like, she's not willing to do that. She's not willing, because, like, she would essentially be calling out a hit on someone, because she knows that Tony would kill the guy.
There's so many reasons, and there's so many people who just, like, want that blood,
right?
You know, they want that,
right?
And I think that's first in and of itself is telling that,
and
people
in
want to see that.
And blood. In real life, like, it's more complex than that. I mean,
yes. Well, I mean, look, sexual assault, especially rape, is one of the worst things you could any human could possibly do to another human.
Right.
But murdering them, is that meeting out justice? I don't know. I'm just posing that question, you know, because Melfi didn't die. Her life did not end. Right. So murdering that person. Jesus Rossi, after this episode, maybe he goes on to, redeem himself somehow. I don't know. But he's not given that opportunity if Tony fucking hacks his head off. But yeah, that's the big question. But so that's our we kicked it off with the big deep.
No, as we shit, but, yeah, as we have to for this.
Right.
You know, the chain of command thing is kind of weak.
Oh, how it gets,
like,
thrown out.
I feel like I need. I feel like I want more explanation.
Wait, what do you mean?
Again?
Oh yeah, like how they dropped the,
like,
the,
wow,
yeah, the
how, like,
drop
how
the
did the chain of command right. get f- like? That's. I mean, I understand why they did it. Like, you know, they didn't want to, like, make this a big thing. Mm-hmm. I guess, and it just, like, sort of, like, you know, they're just writing it for this episode, and then it's not going to continue. But I'm sort of like, I guess part of me, the SVU in me, wanted more. reason why that they can't do anything anymore. Don't you think it's also funny that this, you know, it's like, yes, it's the moral high ground, like, you know, for Tony not to do anything. But when someone hurts his sister, that's the start of this. He attacks them. And we're like, yeah, cool. But his sister was like, in
right.
Line,
I think but. That, I think that's very, like, that was very
it's
intentional.
It's a great juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah.
Because they knew that Janice was not a fan favorite. And so it's this interesting sort of, like, yeah, your sympathies lie with Melfi when she's sexually assaulted. And then when Janice has ribs broken by some Russian goons, we're like, yes. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Right?
Which is sick in its own mind. But also, you know, Janice sucks, so.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
I mean,
what are you gonna do?
When she's, like, shittily playing I Can't Get No Satisfaction on the guitar, you're just like, oh yeah.
Well,
fuck
I mean
it.
That was
oh
that God. Was the toughest part to watch for me.
It's great touch.
and then by the end of the episode, she's swearing herself to the Lord.
Yep.
Jesus, who, which also coincidence, she goes, like, all religious for Jesus, while Melfi rejects Jesus,
yeah,
Jesus Rossi. Is that
true?
I don't know. Is that some writing, or is that just, I don't know? Look,
I don't know. Really.
We'll move on.
Maybe. Do you have any big questions for that you're gonna pose to us, because I have a take about the whole episode.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Or like a take part of the episode. Do you think that Tony is afraid of Jackie April?
Jackie like, Jr.
Like as a big like a,
yeah.
What Jackie Jr.
Yeah. Afraid do you of think him? That he
for like getting payback?
He is afraid. No. Do you think that he is afraid of like him getting stronger?
Because Christopher keeps saying he's the heir apparent.
He's the heir apparent.
that heir apparent.
He's the heir apparent. He's pleasing the April crew in some way by putting, you know, Gigi in there. You know, Ralphie, I guess, is probably, well, no, Ralphie's like a Tony guy.
Yeah.
Like, and did he promise him? Like, Christopher's like, did you? Like, you know, he doesn't necessarily.
Like, did he promise his dad that to protect Jackie Jr.?
Yeah,
that's a good question. I never thought. Obviously, it's not something that happens on camera. We don't.
Right.
And honestly, Jackie seems stupid, but he also seems like a little savvy. Like that score worked, and it was his idea. And he can't. He's obviously not book smart.
He also doesn't like hold back like the lunch meeting. Like he doesn't hold back like giving it to Tony. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and he sort of tells Tony it was a good idea to promote Ralph, even though
does,
like
yeah,
like he
well no he no he says it was a good idea to pass over Ralph.
Pass over Ralph.
Oh, pass over. Yeah. That's what I meant. He has a sliver of like savviness that I'm like
that he's very eager to show.
And I feel like they're writing like, is this real? Did Tony like?
I thought about that. Well, I never thought about it like that. I don't think Tony's afraid of him. I don't think he sees him as a threat yet.
He doesn't see any imminent danger.
Right.
But I think, you know, Christopher talking, and he says it a few times, not like in episodes previous, like, you know, he's the heir apparent.
Yeah. Little Lord Fuckpants.
I think more than
saying he.
What you're saying, Spells, I think they were sort of starting to one like thread for the season is like how Tony treats Christopher versus how Tony treats Jackie Jr.
Right.
You know, and that conversation they have in the basement in this episode where he's like, you know, he's not like us. He's not one of us. His dad never wanted this, you know, but Christopher's like, oh, but it's good enough for me. Like, I'm okay. Like,
it is interesting. If Christopher didn't exist, would Tony disregard what, like, let's say that like Jackie Senior did ask him to look after Jackie Junior?
Mm-hmm.
Would he disregard it anyway and use Jackie Junior in that capacity?
His close
right hand person, like setting them up to be, you know, like family, you know.
Yeah, I'm skeptical of it because I think in Tony's mind he lumps Jackie Jr. in with his own kids. He lumps him in with like Meadow and AJ more than Chris and Chris's generation. So I can't possibly see.
That's true.
But that's a good question. I mean, why? Like
he does in a way, yeah.
But he also like, I mean, especially as the series goes on, he's definitely leaning on people Jackie's age or that sort of thing for muscle for.
That's true. Benny's probably around the same age as him, like
maybe a little older. But like, yeah, what about Muscles Marinara?
Yeah, Muscles Marinara.
What's his name? Penny Annunziata. He calls him Penny Arrabbiata.
Oh, yeah.
The guy he punches, like, after he's been shot.
Beats up, yeah.
He, like, beats up.
I mean, Tony was someone who was young, who sort of rose through the ranks after doing something big.
Right.
And he's like, well, this is his kid. Like, he must, you know, and I respect his father. And his uncle wasn't someone to like, you know, he came to an unfortunate demise, but like, you know, it was someone who was also posturing against him. Like, you know, if we're if he's like thinking about like this family, he's, and you know, his own family, mm-hmm. I feel like in the, he's got a little bit of like, I have to nip this in the bud yeah. before, you know, and Christopher, I think he is easily, someone he can manipulate. Whereas Jackie Jr., he's not sure.
That's true.
He's trying to manipulate him, and it's sort of work, and it's sort of working, mm-hmm. but it's also like he has a harder time manipulating.
Sure. I mean, maybe in the way that Tony Soprano doesn't. Sometimes he, especially with regards to his mob activity, he acts in ways that not even he realizes like what he's ultimately doing. It's sort of like instinct for him. So mm-hmm. maybe in the way, in the back of his mind, but I don't think at the moment in the story, when this episode airs and all this goes down, I don't think he's seeing Jackie Jr. as like a credible threat to his power.
No, but I don't believe, because when Christopher says, like, he told you what? He told me to look after him. Like, I don't think Jackie April ever said,
like, I don't want my son.
I don't want you to do
this. I mean, they may have discussed AJ and Jackie and said, like, our sons, they can do better than this.
That he doesn't, and maybe he is lumping him in as AJ, and he's just like pass, like, you know, mm-hmm. he's just doing that, and like being the de facto dad.
Yeah, but
I don't know. A little bit, I feel like it's just a subtle thing that they're really doing. Obviously, I think, like, it goes nowhere. But
I think it's an interesting idea, but I do feel like it's hinted at, like, in the flashbacks to when Jackie's in the hospital. He talks about, like, you know, see how smart this kid is going, like, you know, like, he's so excited that he's going to Rutgers and all that shit, you know. Like, I do think that maybe there wasn't an official, like, hey, Tone, you got to look after the kid. But, like, I think it was maybe, like, unspoken.
Yeah, you know? Tony sort of intuited what Jackie like, Sr. wanted for his kid, like, and it wasn't the mob life.
Yeah.
And especially without Jackie being around to like, tutor Jackie Jr. into the mob life. Like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. I think I think Tony, we see in just the last few episodes, like, he really is like, hey, I promised this guy, like, I'd look after his kid. He's not going to get into this, all this. And he's actually going out of his way to tell Christopher, like, hey, I don't want Jackie Jr. involved. Like, leave mm-hmm. him alone. Like, and he is where he's coming off very earnest about it. Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, is this the most, because mm-hmm. it's one of two things. It's either what Spell said, which I never thought about, which is he's nipping something in the bud, mm-hmm. or, you know, he's trying to honor his dead friend's wishes, and like we haven't ever seen him like so altruistically try to go out of his way to try and do something good with no benefit to himself, right? So it's one of those two things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know.
And ultimately, he fails, like, clearly,
right?
Jackie Jr.
Well, Tony fails too. I mean, Tony more or less pushes Ralphie ultimately to take him out.
Right.
Because I started feeling this way like while I was watching the episode. I never thought of it before, but like, so you know, like it, you know. Richie was a problem. Now Jackie Jr. is a problem. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah, like, ultimate, like, he... Yeah. It's like the veto situation. Tony ultimately decides to do what he feels like he has to just to move on for the business sake, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
The veto thing was a problem for business. The Jackie Jr. thing is a problem. Like, it like, the longer, like, those situations progress where someone, like, isn't taken care of, Tony looks weaker. So, like, he ultimately just decides to, like, fucking okay people's deaths.
Right. Right. Sure.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think you're right. But so, other big thing this episode is Johnny Sack moving to Jersey.
Yeah, doesn't tell Tony, which is very weird. Right? Like, yeah, that's fucking weird. Yeah. Like, Tony has every right to, like, be, like, kind of, like, disturbed.
What's going on?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to stick my beak in. And then ultimately we know Johnny Sack is becomes one of the biggest thorns in Tony's side.
Right, because then Ralphie comes running to him and fucking...
Introduction of Ginny Sack, I think, right? Have we seen her?
I believe so. Introduction of the a million Ginny Sack jokes in a row.
Biggest
hypocrites in the fucking world.
Oh my God.
He comes and John's walking in right after.
I always got to laugh when... He's like, what, you don't keep up with current events? It's right in front of you, you illiterates. I fucking die whenever he says it.
So,
that's the other thing. 10-10
wins. Did we get a 10-10 wins?
The introduction is, wait, what?
We get a 10-10 wins and a WFAN shout out on this episode.
Shout out to
Tri-State Radio.
Yep. The Esplanade is another big thread that's actually for the rest of the series.
Yeah. Museum of Science and Trucking.
Oh my God.
So good.
How much to that?
What the fuck is that museum?
Or 25 million do you think they got?
I thought he said 25 million.
He said 25, and then Zelman says 100 million.
How much of that money is going towards the Museum of Science and Trucking? What the fuck is that museum?
Well, and they keep, like, that's a thing. Like, I think in the fifth season with what's his name? The guy who ends up being a rat. He's, like, wearing the Museum of Science and Trucking hat that has, like, the bug in it.
Yep.
Yeah,
Jack.
Jack Massarone. Is it science and trucking, like, together? Or is it, like, there's some science and there's some trucking?
I mean.
Science of trucking, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it's just science and trucking, but, like. You know, is it like science about? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's just like a science wing and a trucking wing.
It's so New Jersey.
I mean, yeah. I would be all over that trucking wing, like you wouldn't believe. Like I would be like, my dad. If I was a kid, my dad would go ham at the science place, and then, I would go over to the trucking thing and try to see how I can drive
a truck.
If there's like an exhibit in that museum about like here's what you do to drive a truck, I would be
Something that like children would love, like science and trucking, like, you know, kids love big trucks.
Yeah. Our president loves big
whoa. Too
your
political.
Crotch is listening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Too
I'm
political,
sorry.
Dude. Don't even mention him. Too political. Don't even mention him.
That museum is hilarious.
Yeah, what is Paulie says? Like he's worth this assemblyman's worth every fucking penny.
Yeah, that's the first time we've seen assemblyman. He was at the funeral. Yeah. But yeah, that's the whole thing that leads into like the rest of the series is the mob just milking off this like state and federal project of turning this like. Waterside stretch into Tribeca,
which never fucking gets finished.
Maybe because everybody on the job is a no work job for the mob. They sit around and smash Snapple bottles on each other's heads.
Steal tile and fucking smash Snapple bottles and eat donuts.
Yeah,
this is definitely what's gonna become of the LA River. Like when they like want to like revitalize the LA River, it's just gonna be for 50 years. It's just gonna be like. Half a museum and then like marshland, like right next to each other, where homeless people are just gonna like inhabit.
By the way, the back of speaking of marshland, the back of Johnny Sack's house, like there's like huge farming, like tractors, like looks like they're like, it's like, you know, farming crops and shit back there.
Landscape alone was like $100,000.
Also, what was that? What was that?
Maybe he was putting in a farm.
When Tony first shows up to the new house.
He's growing his own tobacco.
When Tony first shows up to the new house, he's got like a gift for Johnny. It's like this big, like brown, like leather clad wood box. Yeah.
It's the box.
It looks it.
Oh, we got like cigars.
But it's like big. It's not a cigar
probably
box.
Gun.
It looks looks like the box from Gremlins when they fucking buy the Mogwai.
Yeah.
It's like what could possibly
some
be in
Gremlins.
That?
Probably Gremlins.
It's probably Gremlins.
here's some gremlins for you.
Other things introduced this episode or set up for later episodes is Melfi asking Carmela to come into therapy, which I think is great.
Oh, that is a great reaction. That is a great shot. A great lesson in just like being very still on camera. Her reaction to that.
Like
when he says like, "Oh, well, my therapist wants you to come in," and she like basically doesn't do anything.
Yeah. It reminds
me, like, wow, that's just fucking
awesome.
That scene
is so well acted because it's so authentic to like a man who is talking about a woman who is someone he's really attracted to and doesn't want his wife to know that he's attracted to her. He's like, oh, you know, because of the knee. He's just like talking about her knee. Like, I'm just like worried about the knee. You know, I mean, a knee can be really, it's like really in his head. He's just like, oh, fuck, dude. This woman I'm like kind of in love with, like, is hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's like, oh, I mean, really worried about her knee.
Knee?
I will say too that she really like she starts the episode looking like very Dr. Melfi, like beautiful, and he's like, what's that? Oh, what's that new thing? And then like she acts really well and the makeup's done really well, just like she looks awful. Yeah.
Well, I mean that's the point. Like she comes in and it's like around, foxy like little number in the beginning, and then by the end it's sort of like she is looking frumpy like on purpose because that's like her defense to further sexual assault, which is incredibly sad and scary. But Carmela's reaction to that whole thing is interesting, and you know, we're praising Edie Falco's acting left and right, but gotta say Lorraine Bracco fucking killed this episode. Just the therapy scene. I mean, obviously the scene of the assault itself, but like the therapy scenes with Tony where she's like trying to put on a happy face is just maybe the best she does in the series.
Yeah.
So, and of course that final scene.
Yeah. Excellent ending to the episode.
My God. That just, it hits you in the gut.
Yep.
And you're so whatever, but what,
please, Elliot, with the terminology. God.
That guy, I think this is the last we see of Richard LePen. Or no, we see him briefly, I think, in the Christopher episode when he's like watching the coverage of like the Columbus Day riots. But that's it.
They have a moment. They have a moment outside somewhere because I've used that clip on Yarn where she's like, "This is where you bring your errands."
Yeah, or, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's from season Irish one. Name, that's from Legend of Tennessee Moltisanti. Yeah, that's
because that's when they're
in season one.
Yeah, because that's of course.
Oh, geez.
That's when they've split up. Because that's when they've like initially split up. Like, because they've gotten back together in this episode. Yeah. But
That was the episode where, because often Richard LePenna is used as like the eyes of the Italian American community who sort of like, you know, stick their nose up at TV or film mob centric stuff. Yeah, yeah. Like Italians who feel slighted.
You said he was Puerto Rican.
By this. Yeah, exactly. He's so taken aback.
Wait, Dershowitz? His name was Jesus Dershowitz? I thought you said his poor.
Oh, no.
Very offended.
So he was an attorney that raped you. Oh, my God.
Wait, so this was on an island? So was this on an island?
So you had to be an attorney or a doctor.
So you're saying this
never
was...
Never please everyone.
No.
Oh, God. So,
let's steer from that. I honestly, I'm shocked that... there was backlash over this because I feel like it captures like the mansplaining to Melfi.
Yeah.
Between,
it does. I mean,
between Richard and between Peter Bogdanovich's character, like I
Elliot
feel like
Kupferberg,
Elliot Kupferberg, like I feel like they're both like not getting what she is going through and trying to tell her like what she's feeling.
Right. And she even says it. She's like, "Oh, condescend to me, Richard. It makes me so hot." Like,
right.
It's very condescending.
Maybe it's a little heavy-handed for now, but like for 20 years ago, I feel like, you know, it's like capturing I would imagine it feels like to be told what you're feeling when men around you like don't fucking have any clue.
Right. Right. Yeah. And he does like victim blame her a bit, like, "Hey, didn't I tell you to get on the phone with somebody when you're walking in the
call the security guard when you're leaving?" Yeah. Right.
Even her son, what he does, how he responds.
Dude, I will say,
I fucking hate that guy.
And I mean, actually, it's great too. Because
jungle
the dad,
out there, whatever the hell he's saying.
The dad responds later in a similar way, where they show his hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, they. It's like, so well, good. I love that.
He looks like such a.
They show him like balling up his hands and fists, and then ultimately he just sort of like releases them, and then the direct next shot is Tony just like severing a
piece of wood
in half.
Oh, by the way, we get confirmation in this episode when Chris is talking to Tony about the stick up at Rutgers. Jackie Jr. did indeed piss the seats, so he didn't come. He did not jerk off. He did indeed piss himself, but he handled himself great. How did he handle himself great? He fucking pissed the seats.
Well, they got away.
I mean, they got away. I mean, but what?
He didn't handle himself great, and he doesn't handle himself great in the ultimate like stick up of the card game. Like, he's not cut out for this, clearly. But I think Chris was trying to save his own ass by saying, "Hey, look, the kid's got potential. That's why I used him." You know, instead of saying, like, "Oh yeah, it was a fucking mess."
Right.
And I brought him in anyway.
Yeah, I did this because I was like fucking not making enough money at the book, and I was in trouble.
A lot of times things fall Tony's lap. Like, I mean, Richie Aprile fell in his lap. Like, the fact that he didn't stick up the card game. What if he was successful at sticking up the card game? What if he didn't kill anybody? What if, you know, like,
it's true.
I don't know. And things have a way of falling in his lap.
This is true.
So I don't know. One thing
I wanted to bring up is I think obviously we've spoken about it in the past. I want to hear your guys' take. Because I love the dream sequences in this show. Mm-hmm. Melfi's dream in this episode is probably my least favorite interpretation of a dream in the series. I feel like it's a little on the nose.
The whole vending machine thing is like really heavy-handed. Like,
the vending machine thing, her putting the little dried macaronis in.
Right.
The dog is very obviously supposed to represent Tony. Like, it's just a little on the nose.
Yeah, dude, Melfi's dreaming sucks, dude.
sometimes dreams are handed. Sometimes dreams are on the nose.
You're right.
Yeah, I know.
But I expect a little more from Soprano's dreams.
True.
Well, you know, they got to represent dreams in a fair and balanced way. Much like my favorite news coverage. Fair and balanced.
Yes, that's right. I guess, because the dream is heavy-handed, it's a little easier for her to identify what was happening in it and didn't need to rely on Elliot to kind of like the Wizard of Oz thing. Like, Elliot has to kind of dig with her for it. Like, she knows exactly what was going on in the dream, you know?
Right.
Well, she sort of comes to the
was heavy handed. Like, she's like, oh, a Rottweiler that is the direct descendant of what the Romans used to guard
them. Yeah, oh, that's sure. That was weird.
We don't need it. The analogy works without the historical dog reference.
Yeah, like, Roman why would army. She know that?
You still got to have like that scene so like the plebs can understand it. Because you know there's a lot of plebs going, what was that fucking dream with the dog?
Dude, what was that dog? That dog was
where
like
are these
scary
vending machines that take macaroni?
I'll tell you what. I've tried to put macaroni thinking it would work. You get no coke.
No, you get your macaronis back. Okay, well, that's I mean, anything else you guys want to say?
I just want to address the plebs, bro.
Yeah, dude. Where are the plebs at?
Like the suit that he was wearing in one of the scenes with Melfi.
Cool.
Like, real sharp.
Yeah. Sharp.
Three quick things. When Janice is in the hospital, she goes, "When did I get like this?" And Tony goes, "You really want to know?" I love that. Yeah. Like, you've always been like this. Like, I don't know, as far as I can fucking remember. You've always been a conniving, like, fucking piece of shit. Look at, like, the flashback in season one when, like, he, like, sneaks into the trunk and like sees her, like she's such a shitbag, like even then, she's always been that way.
Terrible.
Gigi, when they're talking about like where the taxes are going, Gigi goes, this is in early 2001, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Gigi goes, fighting terrorism, that's what we should do. Yep.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Dude.
Well, of course, the mob Quasimodo guys are rooting for... Hey,
Quasimodo predicted all this, you know?
Yeah, of course, the mob guys are rooting for the FBI to redirect all their assets towards terrorism.
That's
but, yeah, very no,
true.
I think it's fair to say that...
Interesting. Very interesting. That stuck out to me.
I think people, especially around the New York area with the World Trade Center in 93 and all that stuff, were a little more attuned to terrorism being a threat, right?
True, so, but that was 90. Still, that was 93. Like,
I know, yeah.
I mean,
I know that's a good.
I think
point,
we were
man.
Fucking yeah. pretty fucking stunned on the morning of 9/11. I don't know.
I do.
I knew.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you did.
I do think it was definitely a buzzword that was used a lot.
Terrorism.
So, probably true. Like, probably true.
But you're right. No, I think it's a good. I think it's a good point.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it's a good find.
It stuck out. The last thing is, we open on fucking Johnny Sachs housewarming parties. Like fucking Cherry Pop and Daddy's playing. Like what was that playing? Like
wait, was it?
Like it was like one of those stupid like squirrel nut zippers. Like one of those like. Was that music wasn't still like in? Like that shit was in like 1996. Like I thought that was such a weird for the music supervisor. I thought it was a weird touch.
Very strange.
That, but maybe it was like Jenny Sack, like what did you listen to? We have to be current or something.
I got this new album, like, Zoot Suit Riot.
Was it that song?
It wasn't that song, but it was that.
Oh man, I would have loved it if it was that song.
In that vein.
Yeah, you open up and all the mob guys and their wives are swing dancing to Zoot Suit Riot. That would have been
great. Right.
I mean, did play a Hack Off favorite. Shout out Hack Off, a friend of the pod. Oops, I Did It Again. Right?
Yeah, they did.
in this episode.
They did.
True.
Which,
well, Brittany.
I don't know if that was trying to say anything. Probably not.
No, just that. She was everywhere back then, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's should
and
we...
of course, Meadow sings it when she's all drunk, when she's throwing food at Uncle June.
Oops.
I'm going.
Yes.
Which is at the end of the season.
Yes,
it is. What are they trying to say with these Britney Spears references?
They probably just like were like, well, we bought this song. Like HBO's like, we actually have the rights to this.
Yeah, let's just use it. Let's go. We paid a lot for this.
What else did I see? Oh, keep talking.
It sets up Ralphie's like obsession with Gladiator. Like that's a running fucking thing. Like,
oh yeah.
What do we do in life?
There are two products.
Echoes in Eternity.
Scotch and soda.
There are two products.
Yep.
There were two products in the episode, like it wasn't like Coke and Pepsi, but they were like,
JB
what the products where they were like,
oh, Acme Cola.
Yeah, Acme's Cola, your favorite.
I don't remember. I don't
care. All right, cool. Should we move on to fucking internet?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'll try to avoid the heavy stuff because I feel like we knocked it out of the park talking about that heavy stuff.
I really do. You know, we fucking crushed it when like fucking internet is kind of hairy. It's like, oh, we kind of already fucking covered this shit because we're so fucking good at this now.
Yep. Okay. So here's a fun one.
Yeah, this is episode what, 30 something?
Yeah, 35.
Like, we are fucking.
Dude, we finally figured it out.
Yeah, we're fucking.
It took
doing
us
it.
Over a year.
We're fucking. With gas.
This is a fun one. This one, so fucking internet, of course, the part of the show where we source questions and comments from around the internet on what people are saying about Sopranos. This one from Reddit user Purple Owl 85. Choose wisely. Choose one of these groups to be stuck in an elevator with for 6 hours. You guys ready?
Oh no. Yep.
Four groups of three. Either Livia, Artie, Adriana.
Okay.
Christopher, Melfi, AJ, Gloria, Johnny Sack, Janice, or Paulie, Meadow, and Elliot Kupferberg.
Oh my God. What was the second one again?
Second one's Christopher Melfi AJ.
It's probably that.
What was the third one?
Gloria Johnny Sack Janice.
I mean, Janice just ruins that.
You don't want to be. I mean, Gloria, no, fine.
In an elevator.
Johnny Sack, I feel like would be a dick to you. The first one was Livia, Artie, and Adriana.
No, not that one. I don't want to be there.
Nope.
I don't want to be. What was the fourth one?
Pauly, Meadow, and Elliot. Kupferberg.
You don't blame him for getting you stuck on this elevator? What did he do now?
Sure. What was the second one again?
Christopher Melfi AJ.
Yeah, that seems like it'll be a little more chill.
You know, it's funny. I actually voted in this poll, and we all voted the same way. Christopher Melfi AJ.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes
because I feel like Christopher, that you seems... get along. He's, you know, he's a psychopath, but you get along with him. Melfi's lovely.
Yeah.
And AJ's just a fucking idiot you could just have a conversation with.
Also, Mike still like made a good point last week. Like, AJ's just kind of aloof. Like, he would probably just be quiet the whole time. Like,
right. Yeah, totally.
He'd be like, just wait for the fucking fire department to come. So no big deal.
Yeah.
Put his headphones on. Yeah, but
I think
it'll
probably be fixed soon, I think.
But we did not win this poll, guys, because there was another group that was beating Christopher Melfi AJ, and that was Pauly, Meadow, and Elliot Kupferberg.
Oh, my God. How? By how much?
51 to 48 when I saw.
Oh, my God. What?
Well, here's the last place was Livia, Artie, Adriana.
Yeah. Anything with Livia is awful.
Yeah. But I don't see the appeal of Pauly, Meadow, AJ, or Elliot, I mean.
Pauly would be freaking out. He'd be so fucking annoying. Meadow is obnoxious. Yeah. And, like, Elliot would just be, like, fucking mansplaining to us, like, how, like I don't know. He'd be, like, an annoying therapist about the situation. Like, he's so, like, such a herb.
There's a lot of, Pauly and Meadow, like, A-type personality. Let's do this, let's do this, or like fighting and trying to be the peacemaker but not being successful.
Right. Sipping out of his stupid gigantic water bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, that's another thing.
If I was in the elevator with them, I'd just be saying I'm hungry the whole time, so I'd be of no help.
All right, anyway, this one from at Ross W. Berman IV.
Oh, fuck.
On Twitter.
Member of the tribe. Royalty. Member of the tribe.
Imagine Jewish being royalty. HBO in 2001 and receiving season 3 of The Sopranos. Employee of the month, disturbing. University, disturbing as fuck. Yep. Pine Barrens, bleak and disturbing. Ralph Cifaretto, one of the cruelest characters in TV. Seriously, how did this season get made? You know,
what?
I only put this like because I think it's interesting because David Chase got so much shit for the first two seasons for being violent.
Right.
Like gratuitously so. And then season 3 is like way more fucking violent.
True.
Yeah. Like graphically violent. I mean, think about Bobby's dad and that whole thing with another toothpick. Yeah, like right. Those fucking murders are obscene.
And like Tony Tracy. Grabbing like Gloria by the neck and like
and
throwing
fucking
her down.
Choke slamming
her. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think they just like, you know, when they needed to find other plot lines, probably because Livia died, they just went all in.
Yeah.
And I think what's great even too about like, I think what's more effective, like with this season is that I think the production value is way up.
Totally.
The lighting is a lot better.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. That roast like, last the, week like, filming, looks so good.
It looks more cinematic.
No, but isn't it looks more cinematic.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think like that. I think that is that sticks with you as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean season 3 brought a lot of changes, but I think the point was it's like pretty like for 20 years ago especially trying. And like now, I mean, I don't know, are you guys watching Lovecraft Country?
I'm not caught up, but yes. Yeah.
There I mean now, like it's just say what you will about
the woman pump.
Well, I was going to say, like, there's a guy getting forcibly raped in the ass with the heel of a, like, stiletto.
Yeah.
Let's not spoil too much. We already spoiled this, like, this TV show for people.
Yeah, exactly.
We're gonna get killed with the Lovecraft spoils now.
Yeah, the Venn diagram in the middle of this Venn diagram, probably not too many people. Yeah.
Way to go, goalies.
Sorry, sorry. Spoiler alert.
I'm sorry, but you know what? We've been doing this for 35 episodes and now this is the end. I'm sorry.
Fuck, I killed it.
Turn to black.
No, but I feel like nowadays it's like a race to be the most graphic and disturbing.
Sure.
And then sometimes it's warranted, sometimes it's not, but like
that's true. Game of Thrones like kind of upped that,
pushed the envelope.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, let's move on. We got this one from Reddit user.
you're in front of me.
What?
Oh, okay.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
Never mind, Gully.
Sorry.
Don't worry.
Sorry, listeners. There may or may not be a Yankee game on while Joe and I have it on while we're recording. So.
Anyway, Gully, you have our undivided.
Yes. Oh, great. Yeah.
Always.
I'm sure that's true.
Absolutely. Always.
This one from user SZZepish896. Don't know.
Okay.
Where
does
Paulie find all these women? Season 3, Episode 4, Employee of the Month. Towards the end of the episode, everyone's at a house party at Johnny Sack's. Tony walks in, and in the background, Paulie Walnuts is making out with some hot blonde against the wall. Where does he find these girls? What happened to the woman with two kids? Did you guys notice that?
Wait, what?
Did you guys see Paulie making out with some, like, tall blonde woman?
I've never noticed that, no.
I just noticed it for the first time this episode.
In what scene?
At the housewarming party with Johnny Sack. He's like up against like the door frame and is just like, you know, being Paulie, but like fucking making out with her. And then it's right before it cuts to like Chris and Adriana out on the deck and they're fucking making out. Like they're like going hard at Johnny Sack's housewarming. What's going on here?
Definitely coke.
Yeah, they're all fucked up.
What'd they put in this fucking punch at the Johnny Sack housewarming? But anyway.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
These people just have no rules.
Yeah.
You know, they have no
rules. I mean, immediately what I thought of was, like, I feel bad for that actress being pinned against the wall with Tony Sirico.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Doing God
no
knows
reason.
What.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Yeah.
The actress who he's having sex with in the opening of season 2?
For no real reason. That's fine.
Hey, David Chase, I think I should be making out with some hot extra here.
Honestly, like from what I've listened, like heard about him, about Tony Sirico, like on Talking Sopranos pod, like it sounds like he's a little pushy. I mean, like I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't like. I listened to the episode where they talked to Alan Coulter, and Alan Coulter was like, man, he was always trying to, you know, just trying to get his face in the shot, always just trying to sneak his way in. So I'm like, I can see him being like,
well, where do I fucking fit in
right,
here?
Yeah,
right, right. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was like, David, I was talking to this extra. I mean, if we, you know, hey.
God.
I mean, wouldn't be surprised.
Wouldn't put it past them. Check it out.
Also, how does he get women? He's a fucking mobster with money. Like, I mean, come on. Like, obviously. Right. Like, yeah, I don't think they, like, met, like, at the club. Like, it's probably some fucking. Like, he has nothing but Gumars. Like, that's, like, all of his shit. Like,
but
just,
on,
like women on the
Gumar.
Payroll. Yeah. Okay, Gumar. Gumars only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a final fun one. This one from at the Sopranos Club on Twitter. Friend of the pod. Stupidest mafia double act. They did a poll between Brendan and Christopher, Matt and Sean, or Jackie Jr. and Dino.
Oh, Matt and Sean. I mean,
can you guys hear these kids?
No.
No.
Oh, cool. I just have some children haunting my house. Great.
Month 8 of quarantine, you're just like hearing shit.
That's fine. Okay.
Hey, you guys
Brendan,
see
Chris,
these,
Matt,
guys
Sean,
see these clowns behind me?
Who's the stupidest, though? Matt and Sean? You would say Matt and Sean?
Matt and Sean. It's tough. There's like a really dumb person like and a smarter person in each of these. Like Dino, Sean,
right.
Well, I mean, Matt
Jackie
went to
Jr.
Pace College.
Yeah, Matt. So. No, Matt. Matt's not a moron, but like
Matt is the smart one of that.
But the team is you would say Matt and Sean.
I think overall is Matt and Sean just because, like Jackie does the shit he does because of entitlement. You know, like it's not stupidity per se, and like he gets like amped up by Ralph to do that shit. You know, like, he gets completely manipulated into fucking trying to do that heist. Like, Matt and Sean are just absolute fucking morons. Like,
yeah, I guess I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, I guess I would say that as well. And that is indeed the winner.
Though that's funny. It's funny that you do say that there's like, a smarter one out of the two.
Yeah.
Well, it was very close. It was 44% Matt and Sean and 42.1% Jackie Jr. and Dino, and then 14% Brendan and Chris.
Yeah, I think part of that, too, is like more recency bias, like if you can call it that, because it's all fucking a million years old. But like,
that's true.
I think people remember Brendan Fallon a little less.
Yeah. And his friendship with Chris was cut short like within the first three episodes, I think.
It's probably one of the better parts of season one. Like Christopher's reaction when Brendan gets killed is fucking great.
Oh yeah, and then I mean that's great. And his ultimate like revenge he gets on Mikey Palmese for killing Brendan is great.
Yep.
That's all I got.
Cool. Good stuff. This is a really difficult episode within a difficult season. A bleak season. Although I would disagree with that other guy. Like, I don't find Pine Barrens to be so bleak. I think it's like one of the funniest episodes. Like,
yeah, it's not.
I guess like aesthetically bleak because they're out in the snow for so much of it. But like, that's like one of the like most comedic fucking episodes. Like,
agreed.
But tough ep.
Tough ep. You guys definitely hear them now, right? You hear them?
Yeah, a little bit now.
Yes, I hear them.
Having a birthday party or some shit? It's 7:05 on a Tuesday.
Folks, if you want to reach out to us and complain about the kids you hear in the background or how we handle this difficult episode or things that you like that you're happy that we're doing, please reach out to us. Email us whenever you'd like at osopranospod@gmail.com. You can always find us memeing and posting our eps on Twitter and Instagram at osopranospod. Yeah, guys. Hey, we're going to a cabin this weekend.
Yes, we are.
We're going to be hanging out. Hopefully, like Sopranos home movies situation. You know, I could like maybe you
no,
know.
No, there should, will be one of us is. Yeah. Especially if we play Monopoly.
Joe, Joe has smacked me in the face in the past, and our friend Steve, who will be in attendance, has smacked Joe. So, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll smack. We don't need to tell these strangers about our plans.
Hey. If you'd like to find us, we'll be out later.
Hit us up.
Come out. All right, guys. As always, oh!
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 You counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food you're craving, Madron, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, gabagool, some fresh fish, some nice bacala, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery, too. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local spot, and your food is on its way. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off your delivery and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Oh, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Chasing it, baby, chasing it. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.